The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning and welcome to the worship service of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania this morning. Wherever you are, that's where we are. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation that is dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm Reverend Larry Pierce, minister at Thomas Paine UU Fellowship, and I want to give you a special welcome. If you're visiting us today for the first time, you'll notice that there will be a link to a virtual visitor card in the chat, and you can fill that out at any time. That's a great way for us to get to know you and for us to respond to any of your inquiries. So wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender or gender expression, we welcome you here to this ever-expanding circle of love, compassion, and justice. Thanks for joining us this morning. Our opening words are from a familiar poem, familiar to many of us, I suspect, by Mary Oliver. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down and to the grass, how to kneel in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Maybe today's service will give you an opportunity to respond to that question that she asks at the end. And now Lindy Fisher will be lighting our chalice and doing our chalice lighting of this reading this morning.
Here we go. We light our chalice this morning using these words from Amanda Gorman, who was the poet at the recent inauguration. For there is always light, if only we are brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it.
And our peace lamp will now be lit by Preston Lutweiler.
Thank you.
And now I will light the peace lamp. Your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song this morning is entitled Hail the Glorious Golden City. It was written by Felix Adler, who I'll be talking about a little later in the sermon. I'm really thankful to our co-music directors, Gail and Christine, for reminding me of this particular song. Adler was the founder of the Ethical Culture Movement, and this particular song has made its way not only into the Unitarian Universalist hymnal, but also the Methodist hymnal and the Congregational hymnal, and it expresses hope, aspiration, and our ideals and our particular role to bringing about a world that we can be proud of participating in. So, let's join together in singing this gathering song. The words will appear on the screen.
Shine. task divine, almost aid alike to carry forward one sublime design, and the work that we have builded oft with bleeding hands and tears, oft in
We are at a particular moment in the history of this country. We're also probably at a particular moment in our own lives. And we wanted to take some time this morning for engaging in a ritual to move forward. So allow yourself to just feel held by the chair that you're sitting in. Allow yourself to feel your feet on the ground. Appreciate the surroundings of wherever you are, and appreciate that you are being held physically as we hold one another in our hearts. Take a moment now to recognize that this breath is a holy breath, that this breath is your way of capturing that which is holy within you and holy within the world. I'm going to read a poem by Victoria Safford, and that will be followed by some reflections that we'll do together, and then a closing prayer and a chant. The poem is entitled Gates of Hope, and Victoria Safford is one of my Unitarian minister colleagues, and she writes, "Our mission is to plant ourselves at the gates of hope. Not the prudent gates of optimism, which are somewhat narrower, not the stalwart, boring gates of common sense, nor the strident gates of self-righteousness, which creak on shrill and angry hinges. People cannot hear us there. They cannot pass through. Nor the cheerful, flimsy garden gate of everything is going to be all right, but a different, sometimes lonely place, the place of truth telling about your own soul first of all and its condition, the place of resistance and defiance, the piece of ground from which you see the world, both as it is and as it could be and as it will be. The place from which you glimpse not only struggle, but the joy of the struggle. And we stand there beckoning and calling, telling people what we are seeing, asking people what they see." So let's take a moment now to do some inner seeing. I'm going to ask you two questions, one question at a time. And I want you to listen to the response first as a sensation before the words arise. First, as a sensation perhaps that turns into an emotion. And from sensation to emotion, maybe you can find a word, a phrase, or a sentence that captures your own particular response to each of these questions. So the first question is, what do you want to leave behind from these last years? Sense your response, feel your response, and find the words of your response. So whatever that response to the question was, what do you want to leave behind from these last years? Imagine placing it in your hands like I'm doing here. And actually leave it behind, throw it behind you. Give a sense of letting that go so you can stand in a place, if only for a minute, without that which has burdened you, without that which has stressed you, without that which you no longer need or want in your life. And now, as I approach the second question, I want to remind you again to first listen for your response as sensation, and then sensation that perhaps arises into an emotion, and an emotion that might also find words, a phrase, a sentence. What do you want to have more of as you move forward into the future? So whatever it was that became your response to what it is that you want more of, I want you to imagine, and you can look at my hands here, imagine that that is luring you forward. Imagine that what it is that you want more of is luring you towards it. And hold that in a kind of a prayerful way and recognize that what we hold before our eyes, we can also help become. So let's join together in prayer, in a prayerful moment. Yes, there's something we want to let go of. There's something that we want to leave behind. Oh, breath of life, oh, spirit of love, allow us to let go of all of the ways in which that which we have left behind and want to leave behind, all of the ways that that has encumbered us, encumbered our spirit, encumbered our capacity to be more of what we want to be. And yes, we have glimmers and glimpses and desires of what we want to have more of, what we want to move towards. And we recognize that as we move towards even articulating it, that there is a chorus among us that others join in the expression of their deepest hopes and aspirations alongside of us. And like glimmering rays of sunshine that brighten our world, we allow ourselves to trust once more, to believe once more, to move towards that which wants to happen. May we be guided by our hopes and aspirations. May we encourage one another in those hopes and aspirations. May we hold one another so that we do not need to hold any of this alone. So we will join in a chant that includes these words. And I'm gonna say a line and I want you to just repeat it now. I'll go through the lines and then we'll hear the music and just join in when you're ready. So after me, hold my hope. Hold my trembling. Hold my heart. Teach me to be love. Teach me to be love. So those are the words, and now we'll join in this chant, which Christine will sing with us.
Hold my hope, hold my trembling, hold my heart, teach me to be love. trembling. Hold my heart, teach me to be loved. Hold my hope, hold my trembling. Hold my heart, teach me to
When the youth poet laureate, Amanda Gorman, stepped out and stepped up to share her poem on Inauguration Day, in that very same location where only a few weeks before, defiant voices had attempted acts of disruption of our democracy, I believe that healing became possible in her very speaking. Didn't it seem like her words became a healing balm to soothe our wounded spirits and our bruised aspirations? Didn't it seem that she was calling us back to what matters, what really deserves our attention? Didn't she actually ask us to rise in hope and in determination? Whether you saw the speech or heard the poem, I really believe that when Amanda Gorman, a 22-year or 23-year-old woman, stood up to give her verses to a wounded and distraught nation, that I could not help to think later of these words from the prophet Joel. And it shall come to pass that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your old shall dream dreams, and your young shall see visions. Indeed, Ms. Gorman prophesied before us, and in her words that included these verses. But one thing is certain, if we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and changes our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left with. And she also included these prophetic words. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it. If only we're brave enough to be it. She prophesied to us as a nation, and that was her role that day. And yet I know that she spoke to many of us individually as well, since we've all been impacted in various ways by this recent mess that we've been in. and the lingering challenges that we still face. We are all, each of us, carrying our own pains and sorrows, our own grief and uncertainties. We have been traveling together these so many months as a congregation, as friends and new acquaintances. We've all been touched in some particular way by the challenges of our time. We've experienced so many kinds of losses. We've held it together. We've come apart at the seams. And we know others who've experienced so much more as well. So as a nation, and not just as a nation, Each of us as individuals needed these words, reminding us that we will rebuild, we will reconcile, and we will recover. May the winds still carry her words around us and within us. But even more, may her prophecy stir us and stir our individual and collective imagination and cause us to rise in a different way. You see, we need this healing power of poetry at this moment. As John Fox of the Institute of Poetic Medicine reminds us, poetry is a natural medicine that extends solace and relief, gives authentic voice to suffering, reveals insight, and shows us what it means to be human. Our souls need poets. Our world needs prophets. We so fervently need poets who also, like Miss Gorman, are prophets. So whatever our imagined religious sophistication may be, we need to hear the prophets that rise among us to guide us and propel us and urge us forward. It's not above us to need prophets right now. I say, bring them on, bring them on. The theologian Walter Brueggemann, in his book, The Prophetic Imagination, explains it better than I could when he writes, "The prophet engages in futuring fantasy. The prophet does not ask if the vision can be implemented, for questions of implementation are of no consequence until the vision can be imagined. The imagination must come before the implementation." He continues, "Our culture is competent to implement almost anything and to imagine almost nothing. The same royal consciousness that make it possible to implement everything, anything, and everything is the one that shrinks imagination, because imagination is a danger. Thus, every totalitarian regime is frightened of the artist. It is the vocation of the prophet to keep alive the ministry of imagination, to keep on conjuring and proposing futures alternative to a single one." Now, when I first read Walter Brueggemann's work years ago, I thought of it only as a commentary on the Hebrew prophets. I never imagined that his words could be so darn relevant to a time that I would actually live in. I never imagined that we would have king wannabes that would need the corrective voice of a prophet and the healing powers of the artist. I never conceived that our imagination would indeed become our most cherished resource. God bless the poets and the prophets and the artists, for we need them now more than we ever have. We need them to help us see what is, to imagine what could be, and to discern what ought to be. Now, unless you think I am talking about poets and prophets and artists out there somewhere, I want to make it really clear. I'm talking about each of us as well. Sure, it may never be our full-time job, but it is our task right now to cultivate what our transcendentalist forebears called the art of living. We must, each of us, engage in the artistic and the prophetic task of seeing in the everyday the sublime, to stretch our imaginations enough to understand, as they did, that caring for our own soul and caring for our society are both divine, interrelated tasks. poetry is a natural medicine, and that is why I am calling on poetry so much today. We need this medicine, I believe. Another poet and prophet of sorts arose as World War II was winding down. I can, and perhaps you too, can imagine the pain and the damage that was becoming more and more apparent as the atrocities of Nazism and the disasters of this war sunk in even further. It was then that Frank Scott, a Canadian, David, let's hear it for the Canadians, Canadian poet and a political activist, wrote a poem, Villanelle for Our Time. Leonard Cohen later put these same verses into music, so you might have been introduced to them in that way. His poetry said what needed to be said in that moment. It still needs to be said now. He wrote, "From bitter and searching of the heart, quickened with passion and with pain, we rise to play a greater part. This is the faith from which we start. We shall know Commonwealth again. From bitter searching of the heart, we love the easy and the smart. But now the keener hand and brain, we rise to play a greater part. The lesser loyalties depart, and neither race nor creed remain from bitter searching of the heart, not steering by the venal chart that trick the mass for private gain. We rise to play a greater part, reshaping narrow law and art whose symbols are the millions slain. From bitter searching of the heart, we rise to play a greater part." God bless the poets, the artists, and the prophets. We need them to speak the truth about our painful realizations and to call us to transcend them individually and collectively so that we too may rise to play a greater part. I've imagined that we cannot simply rise alone, given what we are in and given what we've been through. I imagine that any one of us easily slipping into despair, into cynicism, so easily given what we've been through. And if it's me, I imagine that you might please reach out a hand before I slip under. And if it's you, I imagine I will reach out a hand before you slip under. We each need to rise and play a greater part. As we sang in the chant earlier, let's keep this as a continual chorus among us to remind us. Hold my hope, hold my trembling, hold my heart, teach me to be love. And so at another challenging moment in history, another poet of sorts, Felix Adler, wrote the verses that we sang this morning as our gathering song, Hail the Glorious Golden City. The time was 1878, a time when there was increased industrialization, immigration, concerns for public health, for children, for children's well-being, for poverty, and for workers' dignity. Adler was the son of a rabbi. He taught at Cornell and Columbia universities. And in 1876, he founded the New York Society of Ethical Culture. Although the ethical culture movement had dispensed of what was considered conventional in religion, that is much of its theological language, much of its rituals and rites, they recognized that though God might not actually need their worship, that they needed, as Ralph Waldo Emerson said, to encourage each other toward good living. In the preface to that same 1899 hymnal, which you can now find on Google, I discovered, it also states that such a service is held not on behalf of a deity who actually needs nothing, but on behalf of humanity, which needs everything. The hymn was actually set to a very familiar hymn melody, I guess it's pronounced Heifrydol, by the Welsh composer, Roland Hugh Pritchard. And the verses call us towards a prophetic imagination as well. I'll read some of those again. Hail the glorious golden city, pictured by the seers of old. Everlasting light shines o'er it, wondrous things of it are told. Wise and righteous men and women dwell within its gleaming walls. Wrong is banished from its border. Justice reigns supreme o'er all. So that's the vision, but I think the next verse is the one that calls us into action. We are builders of that city. All our joys and all our groans help to raise its shining ramparts. All our lives are building stones, whether humble or exalted. All are called to life, to the task divine. All must aid to carry forward one sublime design. So our Unitarian Universalist history reminds us that indeed all our lives are building stones. Our tradition upholds a deep devotion to our own ongoing individual personal development throughout our life, and also the intricately connected devotion to the betterment of our world. The testimonies of our Unitarian Universalist faith and heritage attest to not just personal development, not just betterment of our world, but both. Most certainly, we are not all in the same starting place. I recognize that. Look around and notice that some of us are retired, employed, barely employed, or unemployed. Look around and notice that some of us are feeling healthy, and others of us are hanging on to whatever health we still have. Yet we can still, no matter what our particular parameters are, tend to this wild and precious life that is our own and to take care of it. Whatever our parameters, we can still tend for this common good in whatever small and necessary ways that we can. Look around and notice that we have been part of a caste system in this country since its very beginning. We're part of a story that we're not proud of. First, it was the indigenous people who were exploited and stolen from, and then at another moment, the unfolding of this country, it was the Irish or the English that were indentured servants. And then it was enslaved Africans, and the story continues in a caste system. Look around and recognize that we, the people, has hardly met all the people. We all carry some impact from the caste system in varying degrees, yet our story, and painful and overwhelming as it is, still needs us to author another story in this moment in history, now that we realize it ever more clearly. As Amanda Gorman reminds us, somehow we weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. So where do we begin to be artists of our own lives, to be artists of the common good? Where do we start to take on what Adler called the task divine? What practices do we need for growing our own soul or our own society? So I want to propose some simple practice. I want to propose that we make it a common practice to ask ourselves these three questions daily, regularly, every now and then. Are you ready? Let's start now. It might help to think of one area of your life where you want some shift, some change. Maybe it was something that you came to mind as part of your response of the ritual that we did earlier. Don't pick the most demanding one for this particular experience right now, but what is something that you're wanting to have shift or change, that you're wanting to move towards, that you're wanting to bring about? So I'm going to ask each question and pause so that we can each think at least briefly of, alongside of one another. The first question is, am I able to do about this situation and about this aspiration? What am I capable of doing right now? The second question is, what might be possible? And the third question is, what ought I do? Realizing I'm doing this in an accelerated way, but I want us to recognize that each of these questions are important. These same questions can be applied to social issues that we face as well as our own individual ones. We can dare to ask all three questions and notice that each question expands not just our imagination, but also the terrain of action that lies before us. What are we capable of? What is possible? What ought we to do? If we only ask the first question, what am I able to do? Then we may stay only within the limits of that response. We may, in a sense, interrupt the flow of our life, we may, in a sense, impede the gift of our imagination. We may, in a sense, not bring forth all that is our precious life. But we have to start with that first question. What am I able to do? But if we also ask what is possible, it's then that we tap into our imagination, into possibilities for actions that otherwise we might not even have known. If we then ask out of those possibilities, what ought I do to do? We are then recognizing that we are discerning a greater good and a common good. It's also necessary. All of these questions are necessary for the artistry of our lives. If with the mind of an artist, we can understand our lives as clay, then certainly what we are capable of doing comes from attending to the very substance of that clay, of who we are, the very substance of our current capacity. Yet the artist also explores the possibility of the clay, the matter of the clay, and stretches and schemes and explores beyond just what is, until sometimes she discovers what seems right, what it wants to become. So each of us have the ingredients of our life. We have what we're working with, the particular clay of our own life. But we also, let's not forget, have these possibilities, images of what we would like to bring about. And given these possibilities, we always have that question before us. What ought I do to do? Walter Brueggemann adds this about hope. Hope is on that doorway to the imagination. He says that hope is subversive, for it limits the grandiose pretension of the present. It's daring to announce that the present to which we have all made commitments is now called into question. And so, I'm asking us to call into question just what is, so that we might also ask the question of what could be, what's possible, and then push ourselves just a little further by asking, and what ought to be? What ought to be? Let's venture to ask these questions each day, every now and then, regularly. Let's ask them of ourselves. Let's ask them of each other. So in conclusion, let us remind each other that we do not do the divine task of tending to our own lives and the life of our society alone. We do it together. As Mordecai Kaplan, who was a contemporary of Felix Adler, says, and he was also the founder of Reconstruction in Judaism, he says, A trickle of water cannot move a mill wheel. But when these trickles flow together and become a gushing torrent, they can. The presence of others participating with us in articulating our common ideals assures us that we are not separate drops of water, but parts of the mighty current of human life. May we feel that connection to the mighty current of human life. May we encourage one another. May we support each other. May we tend to our own lives and to our common life as if we were the artist of life itself. So may it be. Amen. So this is the time in our service when we allow ourselves to pay attention to whatever joys we might be holding in our own heart, where we also pay attention to whatever concerns or sorrows we are holding. And we hold both joy and sorrow alongside of one another sometimes. It's also a time for us to spend just a little while longer reflecting on the service, the sermon. And if there's some lingering thoughts, some gleanings from the sermon, we can share those briefly with each other. Let's be mindful that we want to be brief as we can be, so that we share the airtime with one another. So following the musical interlude, we'll have some instruction on how to share if you want to share with us during that time, during this time of matters of the heart. So our chalice is extinguished, and we will do together these unison closing words that will appear on a slide. They're written by Theodore Parker, Be Ours a Religion. So let's say these words together. Be ours a religion, which like sunshine goes everywhere. Its temple all space. Its shrine the good heart. Its creed all truth. Its ritual works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living. Our closing song is Building a New Way, and it will be performed by Christine and Isaac. And I think David has got a little piece in the accompanist as well.
We are building a new way. We are building a new way. We are building a new way, feeling stronger every day. We are building a new way. We are working to be free. Start with love.